Thursday, December 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. and NATO warn Russia of, quote, serious consequences, unquote, for any renewed aggression against Ukraine.
Any escalatory actions by Russia would be of great concern to the United States, as they would to Latvia, and any renewed aggression would trigger serious consequences.
President Joe Biden urges Americans to get vaccinated, including in booster shots, as he seeks to curb concerns about the COVID variant Omicron.
For now, the strategy to fight Omicron from the Biden administration is not through any more lockdowns or quarantine.
And Human Rights Watch accuses the Taliban of hundreds of summary executions and forced disappearances since seizing power in Afghanistan. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. The United States on Tuesday warned of, quote, serious consequences, unquote, for any renewed Russian aggression. This as the Western military alliance NATO met in Latvia to discuss Moscow's massing of troops on the border with Ukraine. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken briefed his 29 NATO counterparts on the U.S. intelligence picture of the group's eastern flank and in Ukraine, which is not a member. Blinken said the U.S. is, quote, very concerned, unquote, about Russian troops' movement near the Ukrainian border. Two Russian troop buildups this year on Ukraine borders have alarmed the West. Western officials say in May, Russia troops there numbered 100,000, the largest since Russia's annexation of Crimea in 2014.
Any escalatory actions by Russia would be of great concern to the United States, as they would to Latvia, and any renewed aggression would trigger serious consequences. We have seen Russia's playbook many times over, and part of that playbook is to attempt to create and manufacture a so-called provocation as justification for something that Russia is planning to do all along. And so whether what's been reported fits into that playbook, I don't know. But as I've already said on a couple of occasions, we are very concerned about the movements we've seen along Ukraine's border. We know that Russia often combines those efforts with internal efforts to destabilize the country. That's part of the playbook, and we're looking at it very closely.
That's U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. President Vladimir Putin on Tuesday said Russia will be forced to act if its, quote, red lines, unquote, on Ukraine were crossed by NATO, saying Moscow would view the deployment of certain offensive missile capabilities on Ukrainian soil as a trigger. Speaking at an investment forum in Moscow, Putin said he hoped common sense would prevail on all sides, but that he wanted NATO to be aware of Russia's own concerns about its own security linked to Ukraine. Russia has rejected suggestions it is poised to launch an attack on Ukraine as fear-mongering and has said its troops' movement are purely defensive in nature. Putin says the Russian Federation is also experiencing certain concerns about the fact that large-scale exercises are being conducted near its borders, including unplanned ones. He said that was the case recently in the Black Sea, when strategic bombers were flying 20 kilometers from Russian borders. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg warned on Tuesday that Russia would pay a high price for any new military aggression against Ukraine. He made his comments as the Western foreign ministers met in Riga, Latvia, to discuss Moscow's intentions for massing troops on the border of the former Soviet Republic. He told reporters the West has already shown that it can wield economic, financial, and political sanctions against Moscow. Stoltenberg called on Russia to be more transparent and to de-escalate the situation, adding to Western concerns, Belarus on Monday announced joint military drills with Russia on its border with Ukraine. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg.
We see a Russian military build-up, we see heavy armor, we see drones and combat ready troops, and we call on Russia to be transparent because this is unprovoked and unexplained. So therefore, Russia needs to be transparent and they need to reduce tensions and to de-escalate. We will also, of course, address the situation along the border with Belarus, where we see the Lukashenko regime using vulnerable people to put pressure on neighboring countries. We stand in solidarity with all allies affected, and we also work very closely with the European Union. There will be a high price to pay for Russia if they once again use force against the independent sovereign nation, Ukraine. We have demonstrated our ability to impose costs, economic, political actions, and also over the years also increased our military presence in this region, just to make sure that all allies are totally defended and protected against any Russian aggressive actions.
That's NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. The United States on Tuesday completed 10 days of joint military drills in Asian waters with Japan and other allies as it seeks to deter China from pursuing its territorial ambitions amid growing tensions in the region over Taiwan. The annual Lex drill included 35 warships and dozens of aircrafts in the Philippine Sea off Japan's southern coast. The U.S. and Japanese forces were led by the nuclear-powered USS Carl Vinson carrier, which was also joined by ships from Canada, Australia, and for the first time, Germany. Increasing pressure on China and Taiwan is causing concerns in both Japan and the United States. Japan worries that key sea lanes supplying it will come under Beijing's sway should it gain control of the island. The move would also threaten U.S. military bases in the region. Vice Admiral Carl Thomas is U.S. 7th Fleet Commander.
We try to deter aggression from some of these nations that are showing the burgeoning strength that maybe we have experienced in the past. It is our operations, it is exercises like Anilex, where we can demonstrate our capability to tell these nations that maybe today is not the day.
That's Vice Admiral Carl Thomas, U.S. 7th Fleet Commander. President Joe Biden urged Americans to get vaccinated, including booster shots, as he sought to curb concerns about the new coronavirus variant Omicron. The president described the new variant as a cause for, quote, concern, not a cause for panic, unquote. Japan and France are reporting their first cases of the Omicron variant, while new findings indicate the mutant coronavirus was already in Europe close to a week before South Africa sounded the alarm. The EU's European Center for Disease Prevention and Control says that, as of Tuesday, 44 cases of Omicron have been reported across 11 European nations, adding that majority involved a history of travel to Africa. Outside the EU and Southern Africa, Omicron infections have turned up in such places as Australia, Canada, Britain, and Israel. For more on the administration's strategy for dealing with the COVID variant, I spoke with VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widas-Kuwara.
For now, the strategy to fight Omicron from the Biden administration is not through any more lockdowns or quarantine, but through boosting of vaccinations. So the Biden administration has now changed the guidance for booster shots. It's no longer just for certain parts of the population. Previously, you know, adults who may have underlying conditions or senior citizens. But right now, it's basically for adults. As long as your second shot has been past 6 months, then you are encouraged to get a booster. The Biden administration is also encouraging the rest of the population, basically anybody over the age of 5, to get their vaccinations if they have not done so. So the strategy is more focused on more vaccines, making sure that people can get to their vaccinations rather than lockdowns or quarantines.
Talking about quarantines and lockdowns, the administration has restricted travelers from mainly Southern African countries, Botswana, Zimbabwe, South Africa, Namibia, Lesotho, Eswatini, Mozambique, and Malawi. Are there any other countries in line for travel restrictions? And while we're at that, what about Canada, where we understand Omicron has just been discovered?
White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki today was asked that question, and she said that so far there are no plans to close the border with Canada, but they will, of course, continue to monitor the situation. And I think the administration understands that it's only a matter of time before Omicron will be detected in the U.S. And they know that while travel restrictions can slow the speed of the spread of Omicron, it cannot prevent it. And what they're doing is the lockdown with the travel restriction is basically just buying more time. Obviously, these new variants, according to public health experts, will continue to emerge as long as the rate of vaccination is widely different among countries. Right now, we know that there are many countries with still very low vaccination rate, and those are the countries that need to be helped and targeted in terms of increasing their vaccinations.
There is talk of what is called an international pandemic treaty. The Biden administration is supposed to be working, or at least involving the WHO. Can you tell us more about this and what is it all about?
The negotiation is currently happening right now at the World Health Organization's governing body, which is called the World Health Assembly. It started on Monday. It's scheduled to end on Wednesday. So the goal is to establish the so-called, you know, pandemic treaty, a new international agreement on future pandemic preparedness and response. So the U.S. had initially opposed the inclusion of language that would have made the treaty legally binding, but they changed their mind on Sunday and finally supported a draft resolution that is scheduled to be adopted on Wednesday. And it is expected the treaty, if agreed upon, is expected to be ready and enforced in May of 2024. So that's obviously a long, long way away. It would cover issues such as sharing of data and genome sequences of emerging viruses, potential vaccines, drugs derived from research. So sharing of data and research and pandemic preparedness and know-how and so on.
That's VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widas-Kuwara speaking with me in Washington. Business groups in Australia are supporting a two-week delay in reopening the international border to skilled workers and students because of the Omicron variant. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Australia has changed its plan to allow fully vaccinated skilled migrants, backpackers and international students into the country beginning December 1. Prime Minister Scott Morrison said there would be a two-week delay because of the spread of the Omicron COVID-19 variant. Several infections have been detected in travellers returning to Australia. The World Health Organization has declared Omicron a variant of concern. Business groups have been calling for Australia, which closed its borders to most foreign nationals in March 2020, to allow in migrant workers to ease chronic skill shortages. The Business Council of Australia, which represents the sector, supports the decision to force migrants and students to wait while Australia assesses the threat posed by the new coronavirus variant. But its chief executive, Jennifer Westacott, says that plans to reopen Australia's internal borders must go ahead.
We've got to stay the course on reopening the domestic economy. We've got to make sure that we get those borders open in the timeframe that was suggested, that we don't go back into lockdowns, that we don't go back into statewide lockdowns, that we don't go back to where we were, that we keep on track, unless things dramatically change. I think that's the most important thing for business at the moment.
Internal travel between some jurisdictions in Australia remains restricted. Western Australia, which currently has just 3 active COVID-19 cases, has imposed some of the toughest controls on visitors from other states and territories. Australia has recorded about 210,000 COVID-19 infections since the start of the pandemic. 2,000 people have died. About 87% of the eligible population is fully vaccinated, and health authorities are recommending booster shots. The Business Council of Australia has called for a concerted international effort to distribute COVID-19 vaccines to developing countries where inoculation rates are low. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
According to the group Human Rights Watch, the Taliban have carried out hundreds of summary executions and forced disappearances in a series of revenge attacks since seizing power in Afghanistan in August, following the withdrawal of Western forces. Henry Ridgewell reports.
New York-based Human Rights Watch says it has evidence that Taliban forces have killed or forcibly disappeared more than 100 former Afghan National Security Forces personnel in just 4 provinces where the group carried out its research. Patricia Gossman is co-author of the report.
What they were targeting were the people they had fought with, and many of the cases we investigated were people really on the front lines, people who were known to the Taliban in particular localities.
The human rights group says it gathered evidence from over 60 interviews with witnesses, relatives and Taliban officials. The killings and forced disappearances were documented in Ghazni, Helmand, Kandahar and Kunduz provinces, but the attacks have occurred across Afghanistan. That despite Taliban promises that they would not seek revenge after taking control of Afghanistan in late August. Again, Patricia Gossman.
They offered an amnesty. They have claimed this from their senior officials in Kabul. But what we see on the ground is, in fact, it doesn't apply, at least for some people. They are deliberately going after people either based on personal relationships and enmities or because of the role they played.
Researchers say the Taliban used employment records left behind by the former Afghan government to identify people for arrest and execution. Again, report co-author Patricia Gossman.
What started out as a kind of rush maybe of initial revenge killings in the first weeks now seems to be much more deliberate too. It spread to other provinces, and it seems part of a strategy to ensure that there isn't any opposition remobilizing against them.
The Taliban said they have dismissed those responsible for abuses, but have not provided any further details or evidence. In a speech that aired on state media Saturday, Mullah Mohammad Hassan Akhund, the acting prime minister of the Taliban government, accused former government officials of stirring trouble. He said, "Nation, be vigilant. Those left over from the previous government in hiding are making remarks and causing anxiety, misleading the people to distrust their government." Human Rights Watch is calling for continued United Nations scrutiny and investigation of abuses committed by the Taliban. The United States, the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund froze Afghan central bank assets worth $9.5 billion and blocked cash shipments to the country after the Taliban seized power. Aid agencies warn of an impending humanitarian disaster, with millions unpaid or out of work, basic services on the brink of collapse, and many Afghans forced to flee their homes. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
With Syrian rebels facing defeat, Turkey, one of the rebels' main backers, is now facing growing calls to restore diplomatic relations with Damascus. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Ünal Çeviköz is an opposition lawmaker with the CHP party.
All the Arab countries are now realizing that Assad is going to stay in power, and that's the reason why they are now considering opening their embassies, for example, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, etc. All the Arab countries are now trying to embrace the Syrian administration again, but Turkey is not doing that. So I think the key to the solution is to establish a dialogue between Ankara and Damascus.
Returning the 4 million Syrian refugees who fled the civil war is a top campaign promise by Turkey's main opposition, Republican People's Party, CHP. The party argues that restoring diplomatic ties with Syria, cut at the start of the conflict, is key to fulfilling that pledge, which has widespread support in Turkey. But President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is ruling out any change. It's a stance backed by some experts who say bestowing legitimacy on the Damascus regime must be part of a broader, inclusive political solution. Former Turkish ambassador to Damascus, Ömer Onhorn.
Problem is giving legitimacy and political recognition. I think the regime has to prove itself, I think. I mean, the regime has to prove that they are sincere about seeking a real political solution. But up to now, this is not the case.
Turkey's military presence in Syria could also complicate any restoration of relations with Syria. Damascus is calling for a Turkish pullout. The Turkish forces are in Syria to counter the predominantly Kurdish Syrian Democratic Forces, which Ankara accuses of having links to Kurdish separatists fighting in Turkey, a charge the SDF denies. Given the complex situation in Syria, some analysts warn restoring Syrian diplomatic ties is not a solution on its own. Aydın Selgen is with the online broadcaster Mediascope.
Turkey should be more active opening those diplomatic channels with various Arab countries, Israel and Syria, but also Turkey should talk to different actors like the SDF in the east of Euphrates, and also to Brussels.
Damascus and Ankara share common ground in their opposition to Syrian Kurdish aspirations for autonomy. And that could yet prove to be a powerful impetus for a rapprochement between the neighbours. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
In other news, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has decided that National Guard members who refuse COVID-19 vaccination will be barred from federally funded drills and training required to maintain their Guard status. Austin spelled out the policy in an internal memo obtained by the Associated Press. In the memo, he instructed leaders of the military services Tuesday to publish guidance by next week on dealing with Guard members who failed to meet military medical readiness requirements by refusing the vaccine. The military services have set up varying deadlines that apply to active and reserve forces. Members of the Air Guard must be vaccinated by December. Army Guard members have until June. Austin's policy will affect Guard members only when the vaccination deadline set by their service has been reached. Under federal law, members of the National Guard must assemble for drills and participate in training a specific number of days per year. Austin said those Guard members who are not allowed to participate in drills due to their refusal to be vaccinated will not be paid by the Defense Department, and they will not receive credit that would count towards retirement and other federal benefits. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at vonnews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afor in Washington. In search of a better life, many migrants try to cross in what has been dubbed the, quote, deadliest border in the world, unquote, the Mediterranean Sea. Despite the risks, the International Organization for Migration says the number of people crossing has doubled in the first half of this year to an estimated 77,000. For VOA, Ruud Emmendorp reports from on board a rescue vessel in the Mediterranean, the Ocean Viking.
We're on the Mediterranean Sea in international waters in front of the Libyan coast. We're in an inflatable rescue ship dispatched by the group SOS Mediterranee. And before us is a small wooden boat dancing on the waves. And we hear the calling of more than 100 migrants on board. And one can only imagine what's it like to be floating here without an engine and only the stars as a witness of your presence. The rescuers give life jackets in case the overloaded boat breaks. Then the migrants start to cross, one by one, into the rescue boat. Nobody is left behind. For them, this small step is a giant leap to a better life. Conditions at sea can be devastating, says a rescuer, who identified himself only as Tanguy.
We had operation with people suffering from bullet wounds. Sometimes you have some people who already died in the target because of suffocation, because of whatever. So it's like it's very different all the time.
Requiring green light to disembark 19 mail.
Propelled by the heavy dual engines, the rescue boat returns to the mothership, Ocean Viking, which is chartered by SOS Mediterranee. Negotiating the rocky waves, the migrants climb the ladder onto the ship. On board the Ocean Viking, survivors receive clothes and a place to sleep. Some migrants sit on a wooden deck, while others seek the refuge of a container made suitable as living space. There is 40-year-old curtain maker Salim from Syria, who fled his country to keep his son out of the army. They are playing dominoes. His son is called Mahmoud.
I come to here with my father from Syria because I should go to the war after 18 years. So I am come with my father to the Libya and from Libya to the Italy and the sea.
Father and son and the other more than 300 rescued migrants passed their time during the rescue mission while enduring encounters with the Libyan Coast Guard that is known for pushing migrants back to Libya. Rescue coordinator Anita says that the Coast Guard does not have jurisdiction.
I think that they are coming and trying to intimidate us to stop heading towards their waters, which we would still in any case never go inside Libyan's water.
The International Organization for Migration attributes the rise of the number of new arrivals to a deteriorating human rights situation in Libya. The migrants from across Africa seek safety in Europe, like 32-year-old Annabelle Phillips, who came with her baby Clement.
Security of life that I cannot have in Nigeria. Because Sorry?
And for your child.
And for my child, because in Nigeria there's nothing like security, no security in Nigeria.
The Ocean Viking operates in a zone the size of Denmark, making the chances of spotting a migrant ship minimal. Critics argue that rescue operations invite migrants to take deadly risks. Claire Jucha, communications officer on board the Ocean Viking, disagrees.
We can see that clearly during COVID times as well. Last April, for instance, in April 2020, when the pandemic outbreak actually paralyzed the world, people kept fleeing, but we just heard more reports of shipwreck.
When they have picked up enough survivors, the Ocean Viking starts for Italy. The migrants play and sleep through the days, until excitement ensues when a critically ill person is evacuated by the Italian Coast Guard to the port of Lampedusa. Then, after 4 days, the moment arrives.
We are going to Italy!
The assignment of a port of safety ends a journey that for some survivors took years. The next step is to see whether they have COVID-19. Then they will be transferred to land, into centers where it will be determined whether they can be asylum seekers, refugees or not. The Ocean Viking has arrived in the port of Augusta in Sicily. The gangway has been lowered. For the migrants, a stressful moment arises. Will they really step on land and be safe after a perilous journey? Carefully they step forward, being encouraged by SOS rescuers. A tap on the shoulder, a motivated last word whispered in the ear, and they enter a tent where the authorities register the arrivals. Then another journey starts. Being granted asylum can take years, and the unlucky ones may be sent back home or disappear into Italy's tough informal economy. Ruth Elmendorf for VOA News, Augusta, Italy.
It's bird migration season in disguise over Israel, one of the world's busiest migration routes connecting Europe, Asia and Africa. Each autumn, about 500 million birds fly over Israel from the north in order to spend the winter months in Africa. The migration poses challenges to the Israeli Air Force, which trains in the same narrow corridor as the migrating birds. Linda Granstein and Ricky Rosen reports from the Hula Lake in Israel's Galilee.
Hundreds of migrating birds fly past the full moon rising over the Hula Lake in the Galilee region of Israel. They will rest on the lake for the night before continuing their journey from Europe to the warmer climate of Africa.
Israel is like a funnel that funnels all this migration from Eastern Europe and Western Asia all the way to Africa. And we see here some 500 million birds every migration season.
The migration timing and routes are being affected by climate change, an issue that scientists say must be addressed for the survival of these birds.
They are the clock of Mother Earth. They know exactly when they should come. And what we see in the recent decades is that this clock of Mother Nature starts a little bit, you know, to fall apart because of changes, because of climate change, because of other things, because we don't keep this route of good habitats, of good fueling stations for these birds.
Besides climate change, Israel must deal with the challenge of migrating birds sharing a narrow airspace with the very active Israeli Air Force. Devastating collisions between birds and fighter jets led ornithologist Yossi Leshem to conduct studies together with the Air Force to find solutions to the problem.
Before we started our joint study, the Israeli Air Force lost 11 aircraft, combat aircraft, with collision with birds, totally crashed. Three pilots were killed. We succeeded to reduce the collision with birds by 76%.
Leshem flew with the birds in motorized gliders in order to provide the Israeli Air Force with exact maps of their migration patterns. These maps were used to coordinate training flight schedules and routes to avoid collisions. Leshem and the Air Force have continued to monitor the birds with radar stations, drones, GPS tracking devices attached to the flocks, and even volunteer spotters situated around Israel during migration season. And for a few months each season, Israelis have a chance to see the amazing spectacle of hundreds of millions of birds in the skies. Linda Gradstein for VOA News at the Hula Lake in northern Israel.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Ruoffo in Washington.